Hey, I got an email a few years ago. A guy tells me that he really enjoyed the time he's at the Machon, and he's applying for a job. And the rest of the email right now will leave off for a second. And I look at the email, and I see he sent me the email on Shabbos. So I see he's not keeping Shabbos. And then he writes to me that I don't think so. It goes by the clock on Google, on Gmail, not by the computer. Okay, could be. But in his email, he starts describing certain things, and it becomes evidently clear that he's not keeping kosher. And I'm going to leave a lot of other sad details out, but he writes in the email, he says, you know, I like the classes where he tells stories, I like the classes where he sings songs, so you should not listen to those. And I'm working like this. Every period in my life, I try to move forward. So right now, I'm studying this book on Chassidut. I learn a chapter each night before I go to sleep. You told us, you said a book, said you taught us that we should always take one thing that we do. So I'm doing one thing, that's my studies. And I have to say that as hurt as I was to see that this is where he was, and this is a guy who flew through the Machon with people who come in for a week, a day, and sometimes they maintain contact afterwards. We have a guy who was here for 3 days. He came for a weekend, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, and now he's out somewhere in Russia, and I know he follows the shiur. He's a steady follower. I get to see where people download shiurim from. So I see, he and the guy was in the Machon total of 3 days, and now he follows the shiurim. He's an avid listener. So this is a guy who flew through the Machon. He came in, he wasn't keeping anything. He left, he's not keeping anything. But he did grasp, he happened to be here when we discussed this concept, that a person should have something that he learns every day. So he's learning something every day, and a person should always look to move forward. So he's moving forward, and the basic reason why we're having this class tonight is because we're heading towards the end of the semester, and I feel like on the one hand it's important, we have classes about making the most of your time after you leave the Machon, how to graduate from the Machon. And a person always has to keep trying to grow. That's true. But at the same time, we have to recognize what we have here, what we should get from the time that we're here, and we shouldn't be so quick to leave this place. People are very quick to leave. Sometimes a day, sometimes 3 days, sometimes a week, sometimes a month, and sometimes half a year, sometimes a year, depending on the person. For most people, if they ended up coming here, then they have what to gain from being here a while. And I began, whoever has my sheet of notes, with the basic question that we're going to deal with tonight. How long should I stay at the Machon? I wanted to title the shiur, but I can understand why they didn't post this title. When's the time to leave the Machon? But they didn't post this. And I think that before we tackle this question, every person has to ask themselves a different question. What do you want to do in life? We'll get to questions in a minute, okay? Unless there's something basic, let's just try to run through this first. I think one of the things that people don't think about fairly is, what do I want to do in life? When I was in sixth grade, the Rebbe always used to tell us, what do you want to do in life? And one kid would say, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a fireman, I want to be this, I want to be that. He said, and then he'd say, I don't understand, why does anyone say, I want to be a God-fearing person, I want to perform mitzvot. Yes, maybe the way you learn a living is by being a policeman, a fireman, something else. But what do you want to do in life?
We say Rebbe, you mean Rebbe Schneerson? The Bowser Rebbe?
No, this was the sixth grade Rebbe, the teacher. I didn't turn on, I don't mind if you shut it off. But ask the other guy. So this is a basic question that every person has to ask themselves. Where do I want to get to, and how am I going to get there? And another basic question is, what do I want to give my kids? And before you ask that question, I think you have to ask a more hurtful question, which is, what did my parents give me? and where do I feel like I have to improve on what they gave me? And I always speak about how much we have to be appreciative of what our parents gave us. And that's important. It's very important. It's part of being a healthy individual to really know to appreciate what our parents gave us, first and foremost, life. But we also have to know to look critically, and not critically in the sense of having claims on them, but having a greater claim on ourselves. I have to do better than my parents did. And so the question I have to ask myself is, what do I want to give my kids, and how do I view that in respect to what I got? And how can I do that if I want to do more than what my parents gave me? Now, one of the most difficult tasks that faces every person who enters the machon is that 99.99% of the people who come here are coming out of an aspiration to build a life that's different than the life they came from. And when you don't have a fallback, when you don't have a blueprint that you came from, you're really starting fresh. And that's very, very difficult to know how to run a home that's going to be different from the home you grew up in. The simplest thing is to always fall back on what I saw at home. And this breaks down to many things. When you guys come to us and you sing on Shabbos, there's a person in our building who didn't grow up in a religious home. And you'll notice sometimes they send their kids to listen to the songs. Sometimes they come and they stand by the door. We always invite them. Sometimes they don't feel comfortable coming in because they don't know the songs. They don't have a Shabbos table where everyone's singing because they don't know how to sing. And that's pretty basic. But at the same time, if you didn't learn it, you don't know it. If a guy calls me up and he says, is there anything wrong halachically with having Shabbos candles that are scented? So that give a smell. So in halacha, I don't know the source that says it's forbidden, that you won't see it in any other Jewish home. Why should your kids have a home that's weird? Now, you want to have a good, normal Jewish home. Not that people come in and say, what's going on here? And part of it is being guessed by other people for Shabbos and trying to connect with families. But part of it is also learning here at the Machon. Your child's going to come home and he's going to bring you a medrash that says, Vashti grew a tail. And if you remember, I once mentioned to you guys the story about the kid who comes home and he tells his father, Dad, we learned about the Jews leaving Egypt today. His father says, what'd you learn? So he says, we learned that M16, and they had special fighter planes, and they had helicopters, and they had special machines to dry out the water, and the Jews had these great generals, and finally they figured it out. They made an escape in the middle of the night. They left Egypt. And the father tells him, son, this is what they taught you? He says, Dad, you sent me to Orangetown Hebrew Day. This is a reform advanced school. He says, yeah, but this is how they taught you the Jews left Egypt? He says, Dad, I'll tell you the truth. This isn't what they taught me. But if I tell you what they taught me, you'd never believe me. We don't want a situation where our kid comes home and he brings us the parsha sheet and we don't know, is what he's telling us real or not? Tells us Vashti grew a tail. Is that true or not? He tells us that the Tower of Babel, some of the people turned to monkeys. Is that true or not? Well, these are midrashim, but if we won't know them, how will we be able to tell them to our children? Tells us that Nebuchadnezzar turned into a wild animal. If we learned that, so we know it. If we didn't learn it, we don't. We want to be able to give our kids more than the school gives them. We want to be partners in their education. And one of the very misleading things that happens in life is the less we know, the more we feel we know. Before a person walks into Machon, he figures, how much do I have to learn? You know, okay, I have an encyclopedia, I'll take a course in Judaism, so I'll know. You walk into a class where there's a professor teaching Judaism, and I heard this from guys who learned with me in yeshiva, not the top guys in the class. Guys who were at the bottom of the class who couldn't read a piece of Gemara. And they said they went into a class where a professor at NYU was teaching about Judaism, and they knew more than the professor about Judaism. And I'm not saying this is true in every college, but NYU is a pretty good college. That at least they have good professors. They pay well. An average yeshiva guy, less than an average yeshiva guy, knew more than the professor. He was correcting the professor in the class. A person, when he's out of the system can very easily feel lulled, feel like, I know, what else is there to know? Until we start living life, and until we start seeing what other people know, and until we start learning ourselves, we don't feel like we're lacking it anything. It's known that people say, the more I know, the more I know I don't know. It really is that way. We have to have knowledge in order to acknowledge our ignorance. We don't feel ignorant until we start learning. It's known that great rabbis said, not jokingly, they said, of course I have to go learn, otherwise I'll be the same Amharic I am today. I'll remain with the same lack of knowledge I have today. And they really felt that way. And it wasn't a question of modesty. It's a question that the more you know, the more you feel, hey, there's so much out there to know. One of the mistakes that happens very often when people consider coming to learn for a year or taking time to learn, people start thinking, well, I got to get on with my career, I got to get on with life, I gotta move forward. And people think, like, I got to enroll this semester, I got to go to this bar or bat mitzvah of this relative. And people weigh their learning in yeshiva in the short term with everything else in life that's short term. When there's a story about a kid who was the most serious troublemaker in town, and come Rosh Chodesh Adar, he was having his heyday. Teacher walks in, can't find the teacher's chair, so he stands all of class. He comes to take a drink. They put I don't want to tell you what the chemical is in his glass, but I don't want to tell you. I'm scared. See what you guys did to me tonight. Who knows? You weren't here. No, I'm joking. So at any rate, every prank he could think of was done. So finally, it's 2 days before Purim, and it's a Thursday. They're going to read from the Torah. They open the Aron HaKodesh, and out jumps a little goat.
What?
A little goat, and everyone starts laughing. And the principal, when he sees this, he says, okay, Herschel, you've gone too far. This time you've gone too far. And he calls Herschel into his office and he says, look, you did prank number one, number two, number three, number four, and we know you did it, and each time you said, you're sorry, we let you get away with it. But this went too far. You're putting a gazelle to the Aron HaKodesh, now, I'm sorry, you're going to have to leave. There's another school in town for you, so you'll go work. You'll be a farmer.
Goes to Australia?
What?
Goes to Australia?
I don't know. I wasn't there. So the Herschel looked at the principal, and he said, I messed up. I don't understand you're going to kick me out. But you know what? If you kick me out, not only I won't learn. My children won't learn. My grandchildren won't learn. My great-grandchildren won't learn. Can you kick all of them out? Can you really do this to all the future generations that I owe it to learn? And the principal accepted the claim and left him in the school. When we think about our time here at the Machon, we have to think not only of ourselves and what fits our schedule and what fits the semesters and everything else we're planning. We have to think long term, because our investment isn't only for ourselves. It's an investment as to the roots of the tree that will be our family. And we have to take into account that when you draw two lines on a blackboard, so they could seem like they're parallel, but we all know that if they're slightly off in one way, they'll meet and cross somewhere. And if they're slightly off the other way, then as far as you extend them, that's how much they'll diverge from one another. That's our lives. When we set our path for life, we have to know that if we do our best to go straight, then there's a better chance that we will. And if we just take a short period and say, okay, I learned something about Judaism, I know, we wear yarmulkes, it's a minute, very good, I'm not supposed to walk 4 footsteps, I know how to wash my hands in the morning, I know how to pray, I know the basic blessings, so it's good, I'm happy a person knows that, I'm happy a person knows how to keep Shabbos more or less, and if he hasn't studied it, it's less rather than more. But a person has to recognize that when he's establishing that path for where he's going to go, he's establishing a path not only for himself. And if he hasn't invested the time in doing it right, then afterwards the product isn't going to be the first day, not the first year. It's going to be down the road. When we look at his family, his children, his grandchildren, we're investing not only in ourselves. Now, that's not to say we don't have tefillah. Every person has free choice and the responsibility to make the most of it. But at the same time, we all have a starting point. Where am I starting from? And we're defining where our children's starting point is going to be. We've often mentioned the story about the guy who spends months and years planning to climb Mount Everest, and finally he does, and after a long trek, months of struggle, he makes it to the top, and he stands there looking at the vista, looking at the view, and he feels like he's made it. He's at the top of the world, only to hear some voices behind him, and he turns around and he sees little kids. And he asks the people, they made this climb too? And the people say, no, they were born here. We have the choice of where our children will be born. We're not only drawing a path for ourselves. And when we consider, even another week, even another month of learning, it's another week, another month of investment into where our children are going to get to, where they're going to begin. We can look and say superficially, yeah, I know, we drink wine on Friday night, and we say some kind of incantation. We drink wine on Matzah Shabbos and we say something, and we drink wine on Purim and they all look the same. Or we could know a little bit more and understand that there's a biblical commandment, and when we're saying Kiddush Friday night, we're sanctifying the day of Shabbos. And Matzah Shabbos, we're discerning between the holiness of Shabbos and the weekday. And by Purim, it's a rabbinical custom that we drink. Some say you should drink wine, some say you just drink a little bit more than you're accustomed to drinking. Each person has their area in Judaism where they like to be stringent, and we don't interfere in one another's affairs. Me, I drink more than I'm accustomed and go to sleep. If you want, that we can discuss tomorrow. Tomorrow's Thursday. So if you want, I'll tell you. Now, we also have to ask ourselves what's important. You know, it's interesting that very often it's only when push comes to shove that we have to discover what's really important to us. We can fool ourselves throughout much of life. Person can say, I would never do something like that. Person can look at terrible things that other people did and be a god, the guest. And then a person can be put in a situation, which many people unfortunately were last year, 2 years ago, where it's either his job or he kicks Jews out of his home, out of their home. And his rabbi says, you have to forgo your job. You have no right to do that. That's biblical transgression. You cannot kick Jews out of their home and destroy their property. You cannot partake in this. And he knows that if he does that, his job, the only thing he's being qualified to do is be a general in the army. And here he's being told to do that. That's not an easy decision to make. There's a very sad story that Rav Soloveitchik used to tell to about two heroes that Judaism merited to witness. Was a young man who was not religious at all. Nothing. And he met a young girl who was not Jewish at all. And being that he had no background, so that didn't bother him. And they got to know one another better, and he liked her, and he wanted to marry her. This story goes back about 30, 40 years. So the girl told him, you know, I'd like to know more about your heritage, where you come from. And he said, I don't know anything to tell you. So she said, okay, I'll start studying. And she started studying about Judaism. Started taking courses, classes, and after a while, she started teaching him. And he liked what he was learning. So slowly, slowly, he learned more and more. Till finally, he decided to start keeping mitzvahs. And he didn't know much, but he was learning. And she kept learning, and she became a ger. And then they decided they want to get married. So now he's wearing a yarmulke, davening three times a day, praying, making blessings. And they're printing invitations, and someone tells him, you know, the custom is that a person who lost a parent takes an invitation, goes to invite the parent from the graveyard, so to speak. So he had lost his father, he hadn't known his father as a kid. So he went to the cemetery way out where his father was buried, and he's standing over the grave, and he invites his father, and he notices there's some weird sign on the grave. So he comes back home, and he tells his friends, you know, I was by my father, and I saw he had it on his tombstone, there was this thing of the fingers. What was that? So they told him, that's a sign that your father was a kohen. The custom is that when a person is a kohen, so on his tombstone they make the sign of the hands. So they went to Rav Soloveitchik. A kohen is not allowed to marry a gioris. A kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who became a ger. And they went to Rav Soloveitchik to ask him what they should do. So Rav Soloveitchik suggested that they research to see if his father and married a divorcee or his grandfather, because if a kohen marries a divorcee, which is biblically prohibited, then he becomes a cholo. He loses an element of his holiness for himself and his offspring. And they researched and they couldn't find any basis for that. And they came to Rav Soloveitchik and asked him what they should do. And he told them that unfortunately he sees no way that they could get married halachically. And this girl, who is now a Jew, who caused him to go through this whole long journey, and this guy who went this whole long journey, they both bowed their heads, both literally and figuratively, and went their separate ways. And on the one hand, this is a tragedy. You hear about people who went that far, only to hear that they have to do differently than they'd like to. It's very, very sad. On the other hand, it shows us about the strength that people have and the ability that people have to live up to what they believe in. And we'd all like to think that we'd have that strength. I think that a lot of us aren't even at a level where we'd like to think that. Rav, the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to say that if a person is honest with himself, he realizes he doesn't feel bad that he sinned. And he doesn't feel bad that he doesn't feel bad that he sinned. And he doesn't feel bad that he doesn't feel bad that he doesn't feel bad that he sinned. And if he only is two away, then he's a good person. That's what Rav Shlomo said. If he can make it to just not feeling bad, that he doesn't feel bad that about his sins, so then he's high. He's made it pretty high up. So I think that we have to ask ourselves truthfully, as truthfully as we can, where would I like to be, or where would I like to be, however you want to word it. My brother was considering going to medical school. Now he's a doctor. When he was considering, so he kept thinking, should I go to this medical school, that medical school, this pre-med, that pre-med, this one takes more time, this one takes less time, I'm not going to get out of here till I'm over 30, so I finish residency and it's mahud. And he, that was one of the reasons he wasn't going to go to a better college or not do certain things in his life. And a second cousin of ours, who's old enough to be our mother, sat him down and said, look, I have to tell you, I was where you are, and I'm 30 years later. And 30 years later, when you look back, you don't tell yourself, gee, I shouldn't have taken that year, because now I'm 31 years later. In the span of life, you look back and you say, I'm happy I took the year out and I did something that was important to me. Very often, when we're at our teenage years or our years of 20, 30, whenever it is that we enter the Mahon, we feel like the ground is burning. I got to move on with life. And we miss what we could have gotten. We forget to take perspective of life. And the time in the Machon is really an investment for life. It's not just a time like one would go to college. College, when you go, you get a degree, hopefully you get an education, hopefully you make contacts, and hopefully it'll help you in making a living, a livelihood. You do one more course, one less course rarely does make a big difference in your life. There will be one course, hopefully, that will help you a lot in life. But you never know which one that is. Most of them, okay, they're on the way to a degree. Yeshiva isn't that way. yeshiva shouldn't be that way. If it is that way, you have to ask yourself, what's wrong here? Maybe you're not doing something right, or this yeshiva isn't for you. But that's not the way yeshiva should be. When you look around, you'll notice there are guys who have advanced, and speak to them. Growth in yeshiva is usually exponential. You learn not twice as much. The first month, let's say you learn 10. The second month, you should be learning close to 100. It should really be broken down to years. It doesn't go in months that way. But you'll notice your growth is exponential. Your growth isn't, you're not just growing each year by another few marks. And if right now you're learning Aleph Beis, so then you learn how to read. And if you're learning how to read, so then you learn Tanakh and you learn Gemara, and you'll suddenly see that your learning is growing exponentially. That's the way it should be, and that's the way it is by most people when they're growing. You see someone who you feel has moved forward, talk to him. Speak to him, don't take my word for it. You have to reach a certain stage. It can't happen at the beginning when you're learning Aleph Beis, but it will. And growth isn't measured in terms of how many Daf Gemara did I learn. People very often feel like, my friends are telling me out in Chappelle's or one of the other institutions, they're already learning such and such Gemara. That's not our goal here at Machon Meir. We're looking to give you the tools to be successful Jewish individuals. This is an educational institution which wants to give every person the tools to grow throughout his life and to be an active, thriving participant in Jewish society. We have no goal to get every person knowing how to learn Gemara. You'll notice Gemara class begins with some discussion of A, and then some discussion of B, and ends with some discussion of D. And somewhere in the middle, you also have Gemara class, because we do want every person to learn Gemara. But it's purposely that way, because our main focus isn't only the Gemara. We're building. And if we're building, then we have to know that the building doesn't consist only of Gemara. If you make it to being able to learn Gemara well, you'll see that that's a major part of the building. But it's not the only part of the building, and it's not the beginning of the building, nor the end of the building. Most people never again have this opportunity, and most people don't value it when they're here. Those of you who are older hopefully do, but not necessarily. When one is in in an institution, so usually we want to break the walls down in one way or another. So for some people, when they enter prayer, they always leave a minute before the prayer ends. They're always a minute early to go down to the meal or something else, because they feel like they're being bound by the fact that they have to be here till the last second. So there are, a lot of people will leave before the last Kaddish or before the very end. You'll notice that the people who stay usually stay beyond the end. But there aren't that many people who stay till exactly the end. You have those people who leave a little before, you have those people who leave after. Everyone has to leave when it's good for them. But to come on time and leave on time, that's a rarity. Okay, maybe with Germans more, I don't know. I don't know.
You wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
I have a Polish mother. And the same thing is true once you enter a shir, a class. I wouldn't know to say this, only that for the first time in quite a number of years, I sat in on a shir 2 weeks ago. And it was amazing. I sat there, and after 20 minutes, I felt like I had an ants in my pants. I couldn't sit down anymore. And ask myself how you guys do it, and I don't know how you do it. I think that once one enters the Machon, so to an extent, you feel like, I want to get on with life. I don't know if it's I want to accomplish or I want to have the freedom of doing what I want, or it's the feeling that life here isn't real. Life here isn't real. It's true. You're living in a dormitory, you're being woken on time, you're being given meals. There is a certain element where it's just not real. It's a bubble. So firstly, if you'll notice, the last comment I wrote there is that, by the way, college is also a bubble. I mean, people very often speak about yeshiva being a bubble. Okay, if someone spent 8 years in college and his parents were funding him, no one would say boo. They'd say, right, no. How do you want him to ever get anywhere in life? But yeshiva is also getting somewhere in life. And secondly, this happens to be a positive bubble. You'll notice that philosophers very often speak about academies. And the reason is because if you want to grow, so the mission of Torah, you have to leave a little bit your home territory and enter a place that's a place of Torah. We can't enter Torah and be steeped with everything else and expect to grow in Torah. We have to detach ourselves a little bit. So today, every year, we're detaching ourselves less. Once upon a time, you went to yeshiva so you could send letters home. Then it evolved, you had telegrams. Then it evolved, you had email. Then you had text messages. Today you could sit in class and watch the class through the other guy's cell phone or look at him and talk to him, and your detachment is becoming less and less. I'm not sure how positive that is. One of the questions that people have most often when they come to Machon is, what do I do about all my old friends? All the people that are still emailing me, calling me, I don't want to lose them. Well, I don't think it's so terrible to tell the friends, you know, I have to focus on what I'm doing now. I love you guys. I'll be in touch with you guys. I can't be in touch the way I was beforehand because my schedule doesn't allow it. I'll take once every 2-3 weeks, once a month, or during the break, I'll be in touch. I don't know, but I think that when guys go to law school and when guys go to medical school, everyone understands that they don't have time to sit down and email all the time. You want to grow here, you want to make the most of your time here, you sort of have to treat it like law school or medical school. So I'm a big advocate of taking breaks. I always say, take breaks. But breaks doesn't mean I spend the class learning, and then I spend the break going down, and I spend the class going up. Life can't be that way. And to an extent, if we're going to spend our time arguing with our friends about whether it makes sense to learn Torah, arguing with our friends about whether it makes sense to be Jewish, spending our breaks where we were before we came to the Machon, then we're not advancing in the Machon. That's the basics I just wanted to mention with regard to evaluating staying here. To sum them up, we said that a person has to ask himself the real questions about life and the real questions about where he's going to go in life, and recognize that he's setting a path not only for himself but his family and his children and, God willing, his grandchildren. And everyone has free choice, but you are giving them a certain starting point, which is you. You are at the roots of where your family is going to go, and just like when you draw two lines, even though they might look parallel, there is the farther down you go, the more when one is off, it's going to show. And we said that one of the things a person has to think about is basics. What do I know? How much do I understand about what I'm doing here? And how much do I want to know? How far will I get? And the fact that we don't feel like we know, like we're lacking much, is reflective of the fact that we really don't know much. The more we know, the more we'll recognize we don't know. And when we think about the time in the Machon, to gain perspective of a lifetime, perspective of where do these months or a year or years stand with respect to life, not just what I want to do tomorrow or the next month or the next year. And the last point we made was about the bubble, that, yeah, life in the Machon is like a bubble. Well, it's a sweet bubble. It's a good bubble. And there's nothing wrong with it, so long as we're going to know how to advance from it and be productive afterwards. The last thing I want to discuss is the question of job, parnasa. It is sometimes overlooked, and it shouldn't be overlooked. After you leave here, so especially if you're making aliyah, if you've inherited $1 million, so okay, why are you leaving? Stick around. But if you're like the rest of us, where that's not the case, so you do have to think about it. And there's an American attitude, which I don't know if it's become European yet, I don't know. But Americans have two things that they really, really like. They really like to leave all of their options open, which means they procrastinate making decisions, and they're always thinking, how can I leave all the doors open? So they don't really make decisions unless they have to. And the second point is really an outgrowth of the first point. They're always thinking, I'm an American. I mean, I grew up in the United States, so I'm talking about myself. I'm talking firsthand. I were an American. Okay.
Was, not were.
I was. Okay, thanks. It is Adar.
Huh?
I was reminding you it's Adar. Some people come with capes. Some people say I were. And then capes is on. The second point is really an outgrowth. The second point is really an outgrowth of the first, because Americans, maybe it's relevant to everyone, want to keep their options open. They also say, I never know what will be, so I have to be prepared for whatever will be. And each person in his way, depending on what life has revealed to him, can be. I grew up, I have a younger brother who has CP. He can't walk without a walker. And I saw all the expenses that entailed. I saw the investments that my parents had to make, both time-wise and monetarily. And I spent most of my high school, my teenage years, thinking that I'm going to have to go for a livelihood where I could fund whatever life throws my way, even if it's something like that. I said to myself, you know, a responsible parent has to be prepared to help his children regardless of what happens. We have to know that no one knows what's going to be, and no one can be prepared for everything that's going to be. It's no such thing. You're never prepared for everything that's going to be, and most of us aren't going to be millionaires, unless of course we inherit. If we inherit, we might end up being millionaires. But if we're starting from ground zero, most of them they will be. Most of them are already working on their second million because they've given up on the first. So we can't be prepared for everything, and we can't leave all our options open. Two points that people, I think, realistically will recognize at some point in their lives. When you close in on a degree, so many people, their undergraduate degree, this is how it works in the United States, they do something that will leave as many options that they might be considering open. So they don't close on an option, and they don't get a BA which is going to be productive. There are BAs which you could get a job with. But many people don't do that, because it's more important to have a BA with which you could get whichever MA you want, or move on to whichever direction you want. I'm not saying that's the wrong choice. I'm just saying it's part of an attitude that's prevalent among Americans, and we do have to outgrow to an extent. And if this is the time here at the Machon where a person has to make those calls, I don't think that's terrible. At some point in life, we will make a decision, right? At some point, the person does sign what his master is going to be, and he does decide which courses to take. So, by the same token, you can make that decision a little earlier. In general, that's something to think about. If that's an asset or a detriment, having that attitude. We do have to be prepared for life, though. Meaning, we don't have to expect so much of the unexpected, but we do have to expect the expected. And one of the expected is that there are going to be expenses. Bottom line, there will be expenses. And that is to be expected. And people do have to take time to think, how am I going to support myself when I leave the Machon? How am I going to make ends meet? And that's something which I don't think we can go into on a class level, because for each person the answer is different. We have people here ranging from the age of I don't know what, down to 18 or 17, or I'm not following anymore. But we have all ranges here. So the answer isn't the same. The answer isn't going to be the same for everyone. But I definitely do think that every responsible person, part of your thought process, as much as I'm saying that you should make the most of the Machon, you do have to think about what's after the Machon with the proper perspective, with the proper weight, and valuing the time you have here as much as it should be valued. But at the same time, you do have to think, where are things going? So now we're going to go wherever you guys want. From my perspective, I would be happy if we spoke about this for 2 minutes or an hour. We're going on to Megillas Esther after this. So you guys tell me if you guys have questions or any points to make. I'm listening. Oh. I thought I'd would do something in honor of Purim. I couldn't think what I was going to do. So.
I saw them sitting there, and I figured you were expected to eat them at some point.
I was going
to
throw them around, but no.
Oh,
wait,
No.
No, take.
No,
whatever.
No, he won't get
I don't want everyone diving for a king. Yeah, I'm with you.
Everything you're talking about, I have two questions. I have two questions to ask. About everything you've been saying for the last 28 or so minutes. If I am for myself, who am I? If I'm not for myself, what am I? Who's going to look out for me?
Okay.
And that was a genius.
I'm all for it. Okay.
I can answer those questions. You can. You got to answer it on your own. You got to think about those two questions.
Okay. Good point. Yeah. Okay, so I wouldn't say in terms of years, but I do think there are basics a person should know before he leaves. And again, this depends on where a person's starting from and how pressed the person is to leave. But every person should know the basic laws of blessing. A person should know what blessings are made on what. A person should know the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He should know what laws exist. He doesn't have to know it by heart, but he should have been through it enough that the day-to-day he knows how to do, and the rest he knows where to look up. A person should have a rabbi that he feels close to, and doesn't have to be from the Machon. Preferably from the Machon, but it doesn't have to be. Some guys stay in touch with their rabbi from the town they were in, or they find another rabbi who they like. I don't care. I think one of the things that we're doing very well on this year that I want you guys to keep up, and maybe we should form a group on Yahoo, maybe this is a good idea, is having friends. Previous years weren't as successful as having a bond between the guys. This year I think we're having much more success. Guys are really, we have a cohesive group, and it's a pity we should lose that. When a person leaves the Machon, he should make sure to get other people's emails, addresses. You guys should keep up. It's a strength. It's a strength for life. One of the reasons I'm here today is because when I left yeshiva in Israel, I left going for college. I came here, studied for 8 months, and I left headed for college, and not college and yeshiva. I was going to learn on the side an hour or two a day, but I was headed for college in one of those serious heavy-duty colleges where you actually have to work.
Yeshiva college?
No, I'm talking about the good college. No, I didn't mean that. Why you wasn't? I didn't know. I didn't.
No,
something like Columbia, Yale, something good. I wanted to, if I was going to go to college, I was going to make the most out of it. So a friend from here kept up with me. He kept writing letters, so it kept the connection alive. And then eventually had its impact, but. He didn't tell me, come back, you know, it's terrible, you're in Chutz, no, it's terrible, you're in Chutzar, it's how do you think of it? We just were friends. And when you feel like you have a friend in Israel, that helps. So I think that's another thing every person has to try to have, is friends. And that's something you should have when you're here at the Machon. A person should have a basic picture of what the Jewish calendar looks like, the Jewish year, the holidays, and what's done in each holiday. And the laws of what's done in each holiday, the Jewish year, the holidays, and what's done in each holiday, and the laws of what's done in each holiday. A person should know sfarim that he likes. One of the friends you should make in the Machon are books. There are certain sfarim that should be your friends. Now, every person has different tastes and different inclinations. For a fourth person, it's Tanakh. Doesn't matter, but a person has to acquire friends not only in terms of humans, but also in terms of the books that he connects with. And a person should have a basic knowledge of the Torah, which I'm trying to do in our class. Through a series, one full year of learning Parsha here, so you will hopefully have a good grasp on that. One of the things that people don't do, unfortunately, is review. I feel like I should be giving tests, but we might lose more than we'll gain if we do that. But if you don't review, then how do you retain? How many people here remember what we learned in Mishpatim about a Hebrew slave and non-Hebrew slave? You don't have to know all the details. You have to have a picture. And I think that that's something which the feedback I'm getting is that people learn more than they realize they learn. And you walk away from the class, you remember maybe 10-20%. Walk away from the class, you remember maybe 10-20%. But when people start having discussions, suddenly things start coming back to you. And if in a year from now, you're part of you. If a person can, ideally a person should be able to learn Gemara. A person should have the tools for learning Gemara and Mishnah. That's the ideal. A person should be able to leave here and know how to learn Gemara, know how to learn Halacha. Some of the people teaching here were students here. Quite a number of the people teaching here were students here. And I think that most of the people who enter here are students, I'd say almost all, can leave here being teachers. People who come here have tremendous potential. I think that it depends on how long a person's going to stay, but for most people, you shouldn't leave till, we're talking about a person who can. If he can stay, so why shouldn't a person know when he leaves yeshiva? Be able to attend the Daf Yomi shir and learn Daf Yomi every day. Why not? You guys are capable of it. And if it were up to me, I'd want to see some of you guys ending up as rabbis. I every time I say that, people look at me like I fell off the roof, but I really think that I think a lot of you have the potential for it, and your history is an asset. The things you've gone through give you understanding that other people won't have. I think so, but no one's saying it's going to be easy. So I don't think I answered your question, but that's how I want to answer it.
And also, I know that people go to another yeshiva after this, and I've been here for 6 months, and I heard rabbis say or other people say that this is like a bus stop yeshiva, and they come here and they get some skills.
Depends on what you call a higher yeshiva. If a person learned here and he's reached the stage where this yeshiva is no longer good for him, so we'll recommend that he leaves. The yeshiva tries to build a person to a point, but obviously there's going to be a point when a person wants to learn for smicha. I don't think they have that program here, as far as I know. He's going to want to go to another place, probably. Maybe there is such a program here, and I don't know about it. There are levels at which this yeshiva will no longer serve as a person, and there could be a situation where this isn't the place for a person. The person doesn't feel good here for whatever reason, so he should find a place where he will feel good. Now, I'm not saying every person should stay here, or that this is for everyone. I'm just saying that I think this place has a lot to offer, and people are very quick to take for granted a lot of what the place is giving them and leave, not for another yeshiva, but just leaving and what they call go on with life, which isn't the term I would use, but as far as going to another yeshiva, depends on where a person's holding. The yeshiva has a lot to offer, and I wouldn't be so quick to jump into Hebrew shiurim. And as far as English shiurim, so I think that people underestimate how much the Machon is set up to give you guys what you need. As a yeshiva student, very often you feel like what you need. I want to go to a place where I'll learn good like everyone else, where all the guys are wearing white shirts. You feel like you moved up a notch. Not sure you did. And maybe you'll get better Gemara skills, but you lost and moved up a notch. There's been a lot of thought and experience invested into the curriculum. Obviously, the curriculum has its limitations when you have students walking and leaving on any given day. The fact that we don't have set semesters and a person can walk in on any day, it must be that way because of the nature that we're set up. But on the other hand, that does hinder us to an extent. Nonetheless, he won't enter into a Sperling's shear unless he's fit for a Sperling's shear. And the same thing with Rav Goldenberg. If a person's not fit for those classes, then he won't enter. So those classes theoretically should be that you could speak to people who have gone through the system and hear from them how much they've gained. And going to another place might give you other things. It's worth thinking it through if those things are really what you need at this stage of your life. Meaning you'll go to another yeshiva, you won't have a class in Chumash. If you have a class in Chumash, they'll tell you Arab Chaim on the Parsha. They won't summarize Rashi like they do here. Even if another place is going to work with you on your Gemara skills, let's say, they might not work with you on your knowledge of Judaism. They might not work with you on the knowledge of Judaism. A person has to evaluate whether another place is going to build them the way you should. There will be a point where this is going to build them the way you should. There will be a point where it might make sense for a person to leave. And there will be people that the Machon isn't for them. But if a person is growing here, so the grass is always greener on the other side. or at least it looks that way. If you're here and you're gaining, think it through. I try to be honest with guys when they speak to me, and there have been guys that I think everyone has told them, go to this yeshiva or that yeshiva. We do tell guys to move to different yeshiva if they ask us, if we think that's what's for them. We're here for your best interest. People sometimes do that.
No, that in the Hebrew program they have, it's very good. And even this the English program is very good.
The question is when do you stop to be a Baal Teshuva? Preferably never in your life.
Never. Every day you're a Baal Teshuva.
Hi. Any questions? That wasn't a question, right?
No.
Okay.
What was just asking for?
No, I'm just leaving.
Are you really gonna throw the candies? Or?
Right. No, passing around. I don't have sense. Okay, so go on to the Megillah. Any questions? Did I miss anyone? No. Okay.